Hello, good evening, welcome. I am Samuel Trapp. This is International Flavor. It is 9 p.m. at the Lake Ozark Real Estate of the Art Studio. And lots of content to go through. But I'm going to focus on two huge events that occurred. One in New York and the other one in Sochi, Russia. And the first was, by the way, if you feel like calling in 573-746-8020, if not, don't. And because I have plenty to go through today. And the first in New York, UN Security Council meeting, appearance, press conference of Nebenzia, who's the... I was just going to start speaking in Russian. I don't know the stress on the syllable. And I think it's Nebenzia, but I could be incorrect there. It doesn't matter. But he gave a very good 54-minute press conference with a lot of questions about what Russia intends to do as the president of the Security Council this time. There are some big meetings coming up, and one of the questions was extremely interesting. Said, so there's nothing on the Security Council agenda about Ukraine. How come there's nothing on? He goes, oh, people will be trying to get it in. There will be some debates, but we don't plan on calling anything up. It's kind of pointless because anything that did come up, we would veto it anyway. And that was pretty straightforward, pretty direct. And I think that he put some very serious spin. If you haven't heard it yet, there is a, or you haven't gone to see it, I'm telling you that Americans more and more need to see this. There is a lot of truth in what he said, and every word of it was in English. And he gave the press conference in English. Every question was in English. And so I thought about playing the whole thing for you because it's a valuable listen. And his name is Vasily Nebenzia, and he is the United Nations representative for Russia. And he at one point said, and this is for sure, and if you want to find it out on YouTube, you can find it's a 54-minute video, 54 minutes, 41 seconds. And at one point he said, the West, especially Europe, he was complimentary of Trump and complimentary of the United States. But he said, the West, especially in Europe, are warmongers, and the days of having diplomats are long gone in Europe. And he kind of made fun of them. He said, you know, they're the giants, and he mentioned three or four names, you know, the giants of politics, the giants of diplomacy are just gone. He mentioned Charles de Gaulle. I believe he mentioned Churchill and a couple other names. He says, but there are no more Churchill, and everybody that's left, they are only dwarfs. And, you know, he was pretty straight up, and he was very well spoken, even in English. And it was, interesting because the other day Lavrov gave his speech, and then he did a press conference afterward, and somebody asked him if he would, an American reporter said, I know you speak English very well. Would you please respond to this? I know you've been speaking in Russian. Would you please respond? I would like it if you responded in English. And he asked his question. Lavrov says, no, I'm not going to. He says there are two acceptable, languages here, Russian and English. And I prefer to speak in Russian. And so that's what I'm going to do. But Nebenzia didn't do that. And if you get a chance, and I'm going to try to play parts of it if I can, but it's hard to scroll through it, without listening to the whole thing, you know what I mean? But I think I also have the transcript in a new program that I use that I can just click on the words and it'll play only the words. It's really cool, but I haven't used it yet live. So I might have to go through it. I want to pick a few questions and see if I can get it done. But that's what happened in New York. That's event number one. Event number two is something called Valdai, and it's a Valdai debate club. And it's held in Sochi. I read an interesting article, and today was the day that Vladimir Putin kicked off the plenary session of this Valdai debate club. And he does it, he's done it quite a few years in a row. And it's an opportunity for him to speak in a little bit less formal capacity. There's been a lead up to this for people who understand what's going on in the world, that this Valdai is a very big deal, and it's a huge debate. You can't get in without an invite. You know, you know, I couldn't just go over there and say, hey, geez, you know, I've been, you know, I've got a press credential, let me in. Nope, doesn't work that way. This is by invite only. And you got to be a member, and you can only be a member if somebody, another giant of politics or something invites you to be a member, and those people are invited in there. And I want to, because it's Vladimir Putin, and Putin is more important than Nebenzia, I'm going to start with Putin and his address. And what I thought I would do, and you know what, there was a third one as well. This one was in Moscow, and it's the briefing of Maria Zakharova, and she gives every week a 2-3 hour press conference on the status of the war in Ukraine, status things in Russia, and all of that. And I try to get content from that for the show fairly frequently, because you know, you're getting a competing side of the tale. And so I definitely like listening to all of these people. Nebenzia is a very talented UN representative for Russia. He is, you know, all of them are unforgiving in their critiques of what is going on. And if you haven't, if you're interested in international things at all, and the end of hegemony, Vladimir Putin's speech is more important, but they're all talking about it. And there's article after article after article about the reality of this lack of a you know, one size fits all leadership in the world. And there was one of the questions for Nebenzia, for example, they were talking about, said, listen, everybody has been very critical of the UN, and you were very gracious about the UN in the beginning. And he said something along the lines of, the UN is always only as powerful as its members. And, you know, the structure is here. And I have faith in the UN. Our colleagues have faith in the UN. You talk about cooperation with the United States. There's a brand new counterpart. He was talking about his new counterpart, the new U.S. U.S. UN representative. And I forget his name. I want to say Walls or something like that. Not Waltz, but Walls. And but I could be incorrect. I know I have it, you know, in the materials here to go through if we get that far. But he was saying the cooperation between us. He says, you know, I just met him. He's brand new. It's his first conference, and he seems very likable. We sat, we met, I got a courtesy call from him, and we had a discussion, and then I met him later. And I like him, and at the risk of sounding, self-congratulatory, I believe it was mutual. I believe he likes me too. And, you know, personal relationships and diplomacy are what this stuff is built upon. And he says, and in the UN, you know, we don't always agree, but that doesn't mean we can't work together in areas where we do agree. And he beat up on Europe. That's when he started going on about how Europe doesn't, and he beat up on Biden too. He goes, for 3.5 years, we had zero contact with our Western colleagues. There was nothing that we could discuss, nothing in common, nothing. And he talked about all the rules that are broken continually. And on the one side, you know, they're always permitted to create their own rules and they don't have to enforce them and nobody ever does. And then Putin had a similar theme in his. And what I thought I would do, he gave, and I've been babbling already for nearly 10 minutes just off the top of my head, you know, and about these two appearances, which were, these are two, Nebenzia was talking about the dwarfs in Europe. These are two giants in politics, and these are two giants in diplomacy, and they speak the language of diplomacy, and it's not go and beat up and tell everybody how horrible they are or anything like that, although I'm not saying they don't take some of that, but usually they receive it far more than they give off, but they still say their piece, and they still say, no, we are right, and we stand up for what we believe in, and here it is. So I think without further ado, I'm going to do what I said and begin with Putin, and I thought it would be cool to talk about or to give the first brief portion of his statement, because he he was introduced at the Valdai Club, and it's this is a straight up translation. I haven't read the whole thing. I listened to his speech, not the questions. But I did, but I have this all downloaded, and I can read and follow along. And what I thought I would do would be to start with his initial commentary. But his commentary, he spoke for a half an hour. But do you know what? I think it is truly important to hear the other side of what people are saying, and you won't get it anywhere else if you don't go looking for it. And I hope that people come to my program at International Flavor and hear these things, because they do not tell them to you anywhere. I don't want to say anywhere else, but geez, you got to go hunt for it. You know, it's not easy to find. And so I want to read some of his brief introduction. Well, it's not brief, is his introduction, and then we'll get to some questions, because a couple of Russian news channels were following it live as it went on, and they give a shorter version, and I have it in English as well. So I think I'm going to get started and quit talking so damn much, and let's get to some Vladimir Putin, okay? He was introduced, and the person introducing him, whose name I don't know, excuse me, this is the plenary session of the 22nd Annual Forum of the International Discussion Club of Valdai. It's a great honor for me to invite to the stage the President of the Russian Federation, Vladimir Putin. Mr. Putin, thank you very much for finding the time to come to us again. The Valdai Club has an incredible advantage, excuse me, and privilege for 23 years to meet with you and discuss the most pressing issues. I reported on this last year and the year before too. Probably no one can boast about it as much as us. The 22nd session of the Valdai Club, which took place the preceding 3 days, was entitled "The Polycentric World." We are trying to move from the understanding and description of the new world in application, that is, an understanding of how to live in this new world, because it isn't very clear yet. But we, so to speak, may be a little bit ahead of everyone else, but we're not the only users of this multicultural world. And you, at least, are one of the mechanics or an engineer in the polycentric world. Therefore, we are very much awaiting instruction on the application of this new world from you. So then Vladimir Putin gets up and he says, instructions are unlikely to be formulated, and there is no purpose in this, because all the instructions, advice, and inquiries that we have received prior to this And he's talking about how to live in the world that we live in right now. The translation just isn't correct. The inquiries are given only so as not to follow them later. This formula is well known to everyone. I will allow myself to express my opinion on what is happening in the world, where it is, what is the role of our country, and how we see the prospects for development. The Valdai International Discussion Club has indeed gathered for the 22nd time, and such meetings have simply become a good and kind tradition. Discussions on the Valdai platform give the opportunity for all parties to assess the situation all over the world. This is called change, comprehending change. Of course, the strong features of the Valdai Club is the desire and ability of participants to look beyond the obvious for all of us to see, not to follow agendas imposed upon us by global information space, especially since the internet brings its own good, bad, and difficult to understand, but we do try to ask original questions, but it has its own vision of processes to open the curtain that hides tomorrow. That is not easy for any of us, but it happens that it often works, including on the Valdai platform with you. That translation's a little tough, but we have already noted more than once that we live in a time when everything is changing, and change is coming very quickly. I would say things are changing radically. At the same time, none of us can fully predict the future, but this does not free us from the duty to be ready for anything that could happen. Practically, as time and recent events have shown us, we need to be ready for anything. Everyone's responsibility in such periods of history is especially great, both for their own fate, for the fate of their own country, and the entire world, and the stakes here are extremely high. The annual report of the Valdai Club is dedicated, as has just been said, this time to the problem of multipolar, polycentric world. This topic has been an agenda for a long time, but now it deserves special attention, and I agree with the organizers that this is an important topic. Already, the emerging multipolarity is defining the framework from which states are operating. But I will try to answer the question, what are the peculiarities of today's situation? First, it is much more open, you can even say, creative space for foreign policy behavior. There is practically nothing predetermined in advance, and everything is going differently than it was previously. Much depends on accuracy, reliability, degree of endurance, thoughtfulness of the actions of the members of the international community. Moreover, in the vast space, it is, of course, easy to get lost, lose your bearings, which we see happens quite often. Secondly, the space of multipolarity is extremely dynamic. Changes occur quickly, as I've said, and sometimes suddenly over the course of an hour. And of course, it is difficult to prepare for such change and sometimes impossible to predict. You have to react instantly, as they say, in real time. Hang on one second. And we are going to say hello to a caller. Are you with me, caller?
I am with you, host.
Do you not wish to hear the speech of Vladimir Putin at Valdai?
I'm willing to listen to that speech at Valdai. And here's what I think Vladimir Putin is saying, is we, as a world society of good loving, you know, God fearing, Jesus loving people, Vladimir Putin and his whatever communist society over there or whatever, they're not bad. They're good. And here's what I think we have to say, Sam. We gotta learn how to get along. We got to learn how to get along. And Vladimir Putin is not the bad guy. The Russians are not the bad people. you know, the Americans, the patriots in America are not the bad people. Who are the bad people are those who want to subvert, you know, goodness.
To dominate the world with this nonsense that they've been spouting off for the last 30 years.
And we've been talking, Sam, that's exactly right. We've been fighting against, you know, supposedly the U.S., you know, us, has been fighting against them, the communists, you know, but that's not the fact. The fact of the matter is it's a battle between good and evil. And, what you're doing right now is beyond belief, my friend. You are the guy standing in the middle, you know, and just offering information day in, day out.
And I think it's information that's important. You know, people may not agree, but, you know, if you don't think so, well, you're welcome to find your own, what you think is relevant and important information. But the world is changing, and our children, or our youth, our country, whether it's our children or not, needs to know that we have consistently, without fail, for the last 30 to 50 years, and probably longer than that, dominated the world with misinformation ourselves. And if anybody stands up to it, we say they are guilty of disinformation. Well, I don't believe in disinformation. I believe in information. And either you agree with it or you disagree with it. But you should consider all points of view, or especially those that are contrary to your belief process or thought process, or something you may not have thought of. You know, people might go, "What in the world's he playing that darn Vladimir Putin? He's an evil man." Well, you know what? You're free to believe that. But if you believe that, you should listen to some of the things that he has to say in his own words, and then see if you believe it. Because if he's evil, he is consistently evil without saying things that are evil. He's saying things that are forward-looking, even progressive, one might say. God forbid the word. But he's giving things out that are, you know, the world isn't what you think it is, folks. And listen up. And so when I talk about diplomacy from the other side of the planet, well, they have it. I'm not so sure that we do, because everything we do is extremely targeted. And you do not ever give an opposing point of view. And those that have a different point of view aren't people with a different point of view. They're downright evil, you know. And somehow that just doesn't ring true with me.
Well, opposing points of view are critical. I mean, the thing is this: we have got to be open to different points of view. We've got to be open to them and let them speak. Let them do their things, and then they're eventually going to show themselves for what they are. Mm-hmm. No good.
And cherry pick the things you like versus the things you don't like. That's what we're supposed to do. You know, I disagree with this, and I like this. You know, I really don't. And I try to do this myself and say, you know, I really don't see this as being anything positive. Like I did when I was talking about the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant yesterday. You know, I don't totally agree with what Russia's doing there. But
why is it so hard? Why is it so hard for us to not be able to get along? There is a brainwashing. It's an MK Ultra thing that's going on, Sam. And you've been there. You probably are part of that. I'm gonna guess you are probably an MK Ultra, you know, tool.
Well, is that a type of beer? Is that a type of beer?
Maybe.
Yeah, I am. I am not. But you know, I'm a tool of no man except myself. So,
right. That's what we have to do, my brother. We have to be a no tool except to ourselves.
Well, exactly.
And man, you spend how much time do you spend doing this, and what do you get for it? Do you get anything for what you're doing right
if
now?
If I didn't, I'm going to do it anyway. And so, you know, I listen anyway. I've always been a bit of a junkie on it, and because I speak Russian, and я хочу, чтобы это все было нормально, и я могу говорить на русском навсегда, what I said was, and I want to listen and learn Russian and keep my Russian current, you know, so that I can always speak it well if I go somewhere. I don't want to go over there and not be able to get directions, give directions, have a conversation with somebody or anything like that. I think it is worth the effort to understand other people. And even if it's for nothing more than my selfish desire to travel and see something different. But I've seen some fantastic things that people who either don't learn a language or refuse to travel because they're afraid, don't see. And so I don't know. I like to give my, I mean, I've been to 57 countries and all 50 states. And I got very little in my life to be extremely proud of, but I am proud of both of those things. Because if somebody says something, you know, oh, yeah, I've been there. I can tell you about Morocco and what happened over there and how I loved driving there. You know, I can tell you about Portugal and tell you, you know, wherever. I haven't done enough in the Far East, but, you know, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, those are fantastic places. And you know, I hope that my, ever since I was a little kid, my desire to see the world has been extremely large. And, you know, I don't travel rich. I'm not remotely rich, but I make sure I do it because what else is there in this life except your experiences that you're going to pass along to others? And I hope that my experiences do help other people understand that there's a huge part of the world that they know very little about. And when you only hear one point of view all the time, that America's great, America's great. I happen to agree with that, by the way, but that doesn't necessarily mean that everywhere else in the world isn't something great and positive as well, or that we should dominate everyone because of, I don't know, what do you want to call it? American exceptionalism, you know, Germans believe in German exceptionalism, French believe in French exceptionalism, you know what I'm saying? And it's, there's truth in all of it. And so I don't know. I love the point of view. And if I could do anything, it would be to try to get people to understand that people in Russia are fantastic. They're kind. They're not just Russia, you know, it's everywhere. You know, everywhere you go, you find people that are fantastic. I lived in the Middle East for a year and I loved it. And the people are fantastic and they're all Muslim and they will help you. You walk, it's knowing or understanding or even brushing up against other culture is something that Americans are, in a lot of respects, completely lacking. You know, and there's nothing wrong with that either. There's nothing wrong with loving your country and saying, I love it so much, I don't want to go anywhere else. But it does kind of give you a skewed reality on what else is going on in the world. And I apologize, we've gone way off my topic, and I kind of do want to get back to it. But
how do you feel right now, Sam? I mean, what is the most thing that you are engaged in? What drives you?
Well, because people need to know that we, and I don't, when I say we, you know, I don't mean we, but America hasn't always been that. Did you watch or know anything about this 800 generals and admirals meeting with Trump and Hegseth and all that. Everybody's been talking about that, right? And
the whole thing.
Well, I listened to the two speeches of those two guys, and at the end of it, I'm sitting there going, "What in the world are you talking about?" I mean, in all seriousness, what was the point of that? Seriously, let's get ready for war. Why are we all fat? Why are we? You know, I think that when I served in the military, I tell you what, you know, it was an embarrassment to be part of the fat boy club. You know, you did not want to be in the fat boy club, and they put people out because they were in the fat boy club. And it was, in some respects, maybe not as nice as it ought to have been, but you had a body fat count, and if you couldn't make the weight, you were trained, as it were, until you did. And if you ultimately didn't or couldn't, you were put out of the military. And when standards get low, I mean, I agree that standards have failed. I don't want to. And I was so embarrassed when that admiral in a dress, the man with a dress that was wearing an admiral's uniform, or the sergeant major, the male sergeant major that had breasts put on and was wearing a woman's dress. And it's so clear that they're men. And you're sitting there going, oh my God, you know, if this guy was going to inspect me, and I don't have any problem what you do in the privacy of your own home, I give a crap. But the Army and the military is founded upon the fact that you're a cookie cutter piece, and when you die, another cookie cutter piece gets inserted in there, and you know, that cookie cutter piece can do exactly what you could do. There is not supposed to be any difference. You're interchangeable. And you can't tell me that this guy coming up to inspect me is going to make me go, oh my God. I can't. I'd be thrown out of the military because I'd laugh him in the face, and you know they go, oh Jesus, here's another one. You know he hates transgenders. No, I don't. They can do whatever they want, just not in the military. And so I strongly believe in those sort of things, and I don't, but I don't have any problem with you if you want to. In private, do whatever you want to do. I don't care. And even if you want to wander around in the mall in a dress when it's not part of the military.
If you don't mind me interjecting.
No, you please do. I have to move on because I do want to finish this topic today.
I'm scared. I am truly, honestly, in the heart of my heart, scared that these leftists, freaks, fags, and furries are going to try to kill us. I am fearful of that.
You should be, but you know what I would say to that, and this is going to sound horrible too, but don't act like the people on the right, the extremists on that are going to be doing you any favors either. They're going to start World War III if they continue on the paths that they are going on. We will be involved in World War III. And this is horror story for all of us. So what are your options? Get killed by a bunch of nut jobs who think that you should honor a man. Did you hear about the guy that took a 10-day prison sentence? Where was it? France? Or I think it was France. That he... post. He put a post on the internet, on whatever service it was, X or something, and the post said as follows. And I tell you what, I've said this exact thing myself on dozens of occasions. I have said, well, I suppose if you want my total view on transgenderism, I don't give a crap what you do, which I just said, and it doesn't bother me if you want to dress up like a woman or as a man dress up or as a woman dress up like a man. Great, good for you. I know people that are into that, and I don't care as long as it's not something in the public sphere that is making a laughing stock of the military or whatever. Those things, I draw the line, okay? And you can have a different opinion of that. But this guy said, and then what I always said, exact same, is unfortunately for these people, And I don't say you got mental problems. I don't say anything like that. Maybe you just prefer women's underwear. I don't know. I don't care. But in 200 years, somebody did, and he said it exactly like this, and it's funny because it's the exact same thing that I say. In 200 years, when they dig up this body of this man pretending to be a woman, guess what they're going to find? A different pelvic bone. And if it says, here buried a woman, and the world has changed dramatically in 200 years, and this is not common anymore, they're not going to say, here was buried a woman. They're going to go, oh yeah, here's a male skeleton. And they don't, you know, nobody's going to remember me 200 years from now. What do they care? And if I claim to be a woman my entire life, 200 years from now, they're going to dig me up. And you cannot fight reality. So this guy said something along that lines. And first, he was fined $500. He refused to pay it. Then he was fined $1,000, and he refused to pay it. Then the judge brought him in and said, well, you don't do this. I'm going to put you in jail for 10 days. He goes, well, better put me in jail for 10 days because I ain't going to pay it. And he went to jail for 10 days because he said that your bones in 200 years are going to identify you as a male, whether you claim to be a woman on this earth or not. And that is what's going on in our world, and that is dangerous. And I want my kids to know that, you know what? Maybe you should take a stand like that and stand up. You shouldn't have to, but I would respect you if you did. I don't know this guy in France or wherever the hell it was, but I respect him making that stand, and it's a stand that I would make also, you know? It's a nonsensical world out there, but I don't feel any better about the those on the far right, you know, your Kellogg's and your Keens of the world, driving us as fast as they can toward World War III. It's nonsense. I must have lost him. Or are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, okay, cool. Something happened on your... on your deal. Anyway, that is my commentary. I so much appreciate your call. I really do. But I think that the words of Mr. Putin are important. I'm very glad that you're here to listen to them. And but I do want to continue, especially with some of the questions and answers that they get. This Nebenzia,
Sam,
go ahead.
Bro, Sam, here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is that Vladimir Putin is a guy that's not going to stand for this ridiculous leftist bullshit that's going on. He does not.
Do you know one of the questions that was asked in here was exactly what I just said? They are giving free visas and new passports to Westerners who want to move to Russia, and a U.S. woman, very famous, I forget her name, Tara something, I can't remember, but I'll get to it if I get there. She asked him a question and said, listen, the people are moving here from the West because they do not like what the West is becoming, and Russia has consistently said, we... honor your, like what I just said, you want to do what you want in the privacy of your own home, there's nobody going to interfere with it, but you're not going to teach it to our kids, and you're not going to do it, you know, out in public and be waving, you know, transgender flags and all these other things. We are not going to put up with it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. Pardon me. So Russia and the United States are, we are aligned with freedom and peace. You know, we are aligned with just the right thing. And then there's these leftists, these communists, these freaks.
Well, you started out by calling Putin a communist, and he isn't.
No. Putin is he's a good guy, as Trump is a good guy, and what we're fighting against are these sick, this decrepit people that want to control the population
and the planet, and not just here but everywhere.
Everywhere, everywhere, my friends. So what we
they're
have
driving
do,
us to war in the Middle East. They are driving it, and they are driving it because Russia is otherwise occupied. They are driving us to war in Venezuela. Why? Because Russia is otherwise occupied. And what they're going to do is wake up China, wake up India. They're already saying, listen, you do what you want on your side of the world, but quit telling us who we have to have as enemies. Stop it. We're not interested. And we will trade with who we wish to trade with and quit trying to force us to believe what you believe, because we do not.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. And so there's guys like you, and there's guys like me, and there's guys like this, that, and the other that want to, you know, push these things forward. Here's the thing. The thing is this. Is that we cannot let the deep state ridiculous
they're trying
freak
hard
bags and
they're trying
to control us. We can't let them. We have to stand against.
Yeah, but the deep state isn't only the leftists, dude. They're on the right too. We have a unit party. That's it. And so I don't believe. I always say to everyone that my rule is no lifetime politician, meaning if somebody has been in office more than two terms, he will never get my vote. I don't care which side
he's
from.
So what do we do, Sam? What do we do?
You quit voting for the same old jokers all the time.
What do we do?
You stop and you vote for somebody else. It doesn't even matter if it's the guy on the other side. You get rid of the lifetime politician. And I think it ought to be done at anybody over a GS level, call it 13, 15, whatever. Those people can't serve in. I'd be much better. I'd be much more agreeable if they got a lifetime after 20, 25 years that they would be a senior manager in the government, that after 25 years, whoosh, you're out. You can't be elected. You can't be part of the government. You can't be anything. I'll give you a full salary. I don't care. Just get out and let so you don't have idiots sitting up there like Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, all the same old standard a-holes doing the same old standard a-hole thing and stealing money and getting in fabulously and incredibly wealthy off of us. And they know all the little scams that are going on, or sending money to their nephew. You know, oh, geez, you know, we got this new project coming in. We need somebody to run it. Well, you back my nephew for this, and I'll back your nephew for that. Don't tell me that stuff doesn't happen, because it does.
We know it all. We know it all, bro. We know it all. You know it. I know it. We all know it. So how do we deal with it? How do we deal with it? On just a, a daily thing.
If you're aware of it, you can hopefully encourage new blood somehow. It's the only way you win is encourage the new blood. I wish I knew. I really wish I knew. I'm not saying I have all the answers. I'm saying that as long as people start to realize it, ultimately it will change. Do you know, you used to be able to say, I mean, imagine this, when the X-Files were on, you were a nut for watching it, right? Nobody would believe that kind of thing. If you think on it this year, it's a pretty regular thing for people to think there are, whether it's aliens or whether it's the deep state, whether it's some guy that was involved in killing Kennedy that they put out on X-Files. Remember the horror story that they talked about back then? Oh, geez, these people, these conspiracy theory nuts, they're all crazy. And now that is a regular part, and there are tons of mainstreamers that believe that. All this stuff that's being released now is scary stuff. When I heard what Johnson was saying, I'm like, oh my God, that guy offed him. You know, that was my very first thought. When I hear him talking about what he did, I was like, that guy offed the president. He disagreed with him and he offed him. Now, that's probably crap, but I mean, it may not be. You know, it's like when you listen to him, these people are evil. And you know, they're not supposed to be.
What So what do we do?
What Thomas Jefferson said.
Go ahead and say that out loud.
A little revolution every once in a while is a good thing. And with that, I got to let you go because I really do want to get to the rest of this. This has some very good content, and I hope you continue to listen because many of these things that you and I have just discussed actually show up in some of the things that he said. And it's pretty sad that you got to listen to these sorts of things from the other side of the world, which are the evil people, according to everything that you get to hear in the United States. Nonsense. And I think, you know, it's just, it's not evil, it's different. That's it.
Okay.
Well, sir, I very much appreciate your call, and I thank you for calling in. Very interesting discussion. Feel free to call back anytime.
Good night.
Good night. And there he goes. Well, I want to continue on with the old Vladimir Vladimirovich, and you know what I will do? I will say to you, there are a couple of... The trouble is when you watch these on YouTube and you don't have the entire translation, all they're trying to give you are the little nuggets, and you don't get the whole show of what he's talking about. And so I want to get where we're in about 10-15 minutes and then get to his questions. The entire speech that he gave, the plenary speech, was only about 25, maybe 30 minutes. And I was only about 5-6 minutes in. Let's see. Changes occur quickly, blah, blah, blah. You have to react instantly, as they say, in real time. It is important that this space is much more democratic. It opens the way for a large number of political and economic players. He's talking about multipolarity. Perhaps there have never been so many countries in the world that influence or strive to influence important regional and global processes. A cultural, historical, civilizational specificity of different parties plays a greater role than ever before. Wow, that is a comment. It is necessary to look for points of contact and coincidence of interest, incidents that coincide, in other words. No one is ready to play by the rules set by someone alone and somewhere far away, as one very famous Shansani song, "There Beyond the Fog" or "There Beyond the Ocean." In this regard, any decisions are possible only on the basis of agreement that suit all interested parties or a vast majority. Otherwise, there's never a viable solution, but only loud phrases and fruitless games of ambition. Is that where we are now? Thus, to achieve a result of harmony and balance, activity is needed. Finally, and the possibility and danger of the multipolar polar world are inseparable from each other. The weakening of the dictate, and he's talking about the West, the presence of which has been distinguished in the previous period, the solution and the space of freedom for all is undoubtedly a blessing. At the same time, such conditions are more and more difficult to find and establish in this very strong balance, which is itself a clear and extreme risk. That's pretty damn deep. Such a situation on our planet, which I try to outline quite briefly, is a qualitative new phenomenon. International relations are undergoing a cardinal transformation. Paradoxically, multipolarity has become a direct consequence of an attempt to establish and preserve global hegemony. So, multipolarity exists because people don't like hegemony. One size fits all. That's what he's saying. And the answer of the international system and history itself is an obsessive desire to build everyone into one hierarchy, at the top of which are the countries of the West. The failure of such an idea was a matter of time, which, by the way, everyone has always talked about. He talked about it in 2007 at the Munich Security Conference when he stood up in front of Dick Cheney. And told him, you know, you guys are the bad guys. The world doesn't like what you are doing. And everybody ignored it. But it was a famous speech. And it was a hell of a speech. And he was much younger then, too. I mean, geez, that was 18 years ago. Anyway, historically, it's happening anyway. And it's happening quite quickly. 35 years ago, when it seemed that the confrontation of the Cold War was coming to an end, we were hoping, as was I, by the way, as a Russian interpreter for the Army, we were hoping for the advent of a real era of cooperation. It seemed that there were no ideological or other obstacles to prevent us from jointly solving common problems of humanity and regulating, resolving inevitable disputes and conflicts based on a mutual respect for each other and consideration of everyone's interests. Let me make a small historical digression here. Our country, seeking to liquidate the basis for a bloc confrontation to create a common space of security, twice declared our readiness to join NATO. The first time in 1954, back in the days of the USSR. The second time during the visit of the President of the United States to Moscow. I already talked about this in 2000 when we also talked about this. And both times we received a rejection from the very beginning. I repeat, we were ready for joint work for non-linear steps in the sphere of security and global stability. But our Western colleagues turned out to be not ready to free themselves from the captivity of geopolitical and historical stereotypes from simplified schematic pictures of the world. I spoke publicly when I spoke with Mr. Clinton, with President Clinton, and he said, "You know, I think it's interesting. I think it's possible." And then later that evening, he said, "I consulted with my people. It is unreal now. It is unreal." And I said, "When will it be real?" He said, and he said, "That's it. It was gone." By the way, we all had a real chance at another positive vector of development of international relations. But the top, alas, took a different approach. Western countries did not resist the temptation of absolute power. Well, the temptation was quite serious. In order to resist the temptation, it would have been necessary to have a historic perspective in mind and a good level of preparation, including intellectual, historical preparation. Those who made the decision then, apparently, and simply had no such preparation. Yes, the power of the United States and its allies in the late 20th century definitely had reached its peak, but there will be no force that would be able to rule the world, prescribe what everyone will do and how they will do it, how they will breathe. This is tough, isn't it? Well, there have always been such attempts, and they have all ended in failure. At the same time, it is worth noting that the so-called liberal world order turned out to be acceptable to a lot, and to in some ways even convenient. Yes, the hierarchy limits the possibility of those who are not on the upper floor of the pyramid, if you would allow me to say, at the top of the food chain, but those who live far down on its base. But it takes away a significant share of responsibility from them, such a position. What are the rules? The rules are just accept the proposed conditions, join our system, take the share that you get, and be happy. Do not think about anything. Others will think and decide for you. And no matter what you say, no matter who tries to cover up there now, it really was so. And the experts who are sitting here perfectly remember and understand all of this. I understand it, and I recall it. Some self-satisfied believe that they had the right to teach everyone else. others a preferential way to play along, to be an obedient object of trade and exchange in order to avoid unnecessary problems and get some, albeit small, but confident bonus for doing so. And by the way, there are still enough such politicians in the old parts of the world, in Europe. Those who objected tried to defend their own interests and views, considered at best, so to speak, were weirdos, hinted that nothing would work out for you anyway, so it's better to just humble yourself, admit that there is nothing to gain except an empty place, and with all of the restrictions and the self-proclaimed global grants, they were bought by this concept. They did not hesitate and therefore made everybody understand that resistance is useless. He's talking all over Eastern Europe. This did not lead to anything good. None of the world's problems were solved, but constantly new ones have been added. The global governance institutions created in the previous era were either working or not working at all, and to a large extent, most lost their effectiveness either way. No matter how much potential a particular country or group of countries accumulated, every power still had a limit. Well, the Russian side, as this audience knows, we have an expression in our people. There is no reception against a break except for another break. And it always appears, you see, this is the essence of what is happening in the world. A break always appears. In addition, an attempt to control everything and it's not translating the way, and everything around the world creates an additional tension, and it beats to an internal instability that causes citizens of countries that are trying to play this role of grants to be citizens of countries to raise legal questions. Why are we doing all of this? Some time ago, I had to hear something like this from our American colleagues who said, "We have gained peace but lost America." I would like to ask the question, was it worth it? And did you gain anything at all by this? In societies led by Western European states, the obvious rejection of the excessive ambition of the political elite of these countries is growing. The barometer of public opinion shows this everywhere. The establishment does not want to give power away. It goes for direct deception of its own citizens, oppresses them, and oppresses the situation on every external contour, goes for any intimidation within its own country, more often on the verge of or even beyond their own law. But it will not be possible to infinitely turn democratic electoral procedures into a farce or manipulate the will of the people. This is how it was in Romania. Let's not go into details. It is happening in many countries. In some countries, they ban their political opponents, who are already gaining legitimacy and more confidence from the electorate. We know this happened in the Soviet Union. Do you remember Vysotsky's song? And Vysotsky, I've given lectures on him. I really liked him. I've been to a couple of his museums in Russia. I had all of his albums and poetry. Vladimir Vysotsky was anti-Soviet, but he wasn't. You know, he was just, he told it like it was in song. And so Putin is a fan. That is, they even banned military parades. Soon everything will be banned to hell. But this does not work. Bans do not work. The will of the people, the will of the citizens of these countries is simple. Let the leaders of the countries deal with the problems of the citizens, take care of their safety and quality of life, but do not chase chimeras. The United States, where the request of the people led to a rather radical change in the political vector, is a clear example of this. For other countries, I can say examples are, you know, somewhat contagious. Submission of the majority to the minority is inherent in national and international relations in the period of the dominance of Western countries. This has given way to more multilateral, more cooperative approach based on agreements of the leading players and taking into account or trying to take into account the interests of all. This, of course, does not guarantee absolute harmony or non-conflict. The interests of the countries never completely coincide, and the whole history of international relations is certainly a struggle for their implementation. But the fundamentally new world atmosphere, the tone that the countries of the world's majority are increasingly asking for, allows us to hope that all players, one way or another, will have to take into account the interests of each other when working out solutions to regional and global problems. After all, it's a fact. No one can achieve these goals alone, in isolation from the others. The world, despite the exacerbation of conflict, the crises, the previous model of globalization, the fragmentation of the world economy, remains a whole, interconnected and interdependent. We know this from our own experience. You know how much effort our opponents have made in recent years to, roughly speaking, kick Russia out of the world system, drive us into political, cultural, informational isolation, and economic autarky. In terms of the number of and volume of punitive measures introduced against us, which are shamefully called sanctions, Russia is an absolute record holder in world history. 30 or even more restrictions. So what? He said, so what? We have achieved our goal. I think those present here do not need to explain these efforts that they have suffered a complete collapse. Russia has shown the world the highest degree of stability, the ability to withstand the strongest external pressures, which would break not only a single country, but an entire coalition of states. And of course, we feel pride in Russia, in our citizens, in our armed forces. But I wish to say more than that. It turned out that Russia simply does not let go of the very world system from which they wanted to drive us out. Because Russia needs it as a very important part of common balance. And not only because of its territory, its people, its defense, technology, and industrial potential, its useful minerals. Although, of course, everything I have just listed is very, very important. Those are very important factors, but most important because world balance cannot be built without Russia. Not economically, not strategically, not culturally, not logistically, not at all. That's powerful, friends and neighbors. Well, I think, and he continues, well, I think that those who tried to destroy all of us were just have finally been convinced of this. Some, however, persistently hope to achieve this goal, to inflict a strategic defeat on Russia, as they say. Well, if they do not see the inevitability of the failure of this plan, I hope that life will show it and it will reach the most stubborn of stubborn people. It seems that they have already made this noise more than once, threatened full blockades, tried to make people of Russia, as they themselves express themselves and choose the right words, to be ashamed. They want to make the people of Russia suffer. They build plans, one fantastic plan after another. It seems to me that it is time to calm down, look around, understand reality, and somehow build relations in a completely different direction. And I'm going to pause right here. I'm telling you, this is important to read because you will not hear this here. you won't hear any of it. All you will hear is a couple of things where he says, you know, Russia can withstand your sanctions. That's all you'll hear. You won't hear these words where he says, look, we're trying to play well with others, but you don't want to. You disagree because you want to have, you need to have an enemy. And that has been us consistently since Clinton, he's telling us. We also understand that the polycentric world is also very dynamic. It is fragile and unstable because it is impossible to fix the position of such things forever, to determine the alignment of forces for a very long time. After all, there are very many participants in the process, and these forces are the most asymmetrical, complex, all have their own winning sides and competitive advantages, which in each case create a unique combination and composition. Today's world is extremely complex and a multi-aspect system, and to describe it correctly, to comprehend it, there are not enough simple laws of logic. The reason for the investigative connections arises out of this pattern. Here, you need a philosophy of complexity, something similar to quantum mechanics, which is wiser but more complex than classical physics. It is precisely thanks to this complexity of the world that the overall compatibility, in my opinion, is still rising. After all, a linear one-sided solution is impossible, and a nonlinear multi-sided solution requires very serious, professional, unpretentious, creative, at times non-standard diplomacy. Therefore, I am convinced that we will witness a kind of renaissance, the revival of a high diplomatic art. And its essence is in the ability to engage in dialogue and negotiate with your neighbors and like-minded people. And what is no less important, but more difficult, even with your opponents. It is in this spirit, the spirit of the 21st century diplomacy, that new institutions are developing. These are the expanded BRICS community and organizations of large regions, for example, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization in Eurasia, and more compact but no less regional associations. And there are many of them around the world now. I will not list them all. Most of you know about them already. All these new structures are different, but they are united by the most important of qualities. They do not function according to the principle of hierarchy, subordinating to someone else or to the one that is the most important. They are not against someone. They are for themselves. I repeat once again, the modern world needs agreement and not the imposition of someone else's will. Hegemony, and any hegemony, simply will not cope with the scale of the tasks of the world. Ensuring international security in these conditions is an extremely pressing and complex issue. The growing number of players with different goals and political cultures, with their own traditions, all this global complexity makes the development of approaches to the security issue much more complicated than simple. However, it opens up new opportunities for all of us. Block tricks, deliberately programmed for confrontation, are certainly now anachronistic and meaningless. We see, for example, how hard our European neighbors are trying to patch up the cracks in the buildings of Europe. However, they want to overcome the split to strengthen the collapsed unity to which they have been previously bound, not at all by effective solutions to internal problems, but by blowing up the image of the enemy. This is an old example, but the point is that people in these countries see and understand everything anyway. That is why they take to the streets, despite the pressure, as I've already said, of the situation of the external contour, and in search of this internal enemy. Moreover, they are recreating an enemy of Russia, which was invented centuries ago. Most people in Europe cannot understand why they are so afraid of Russia. That in order to confront Russia, they need to tighten their belts more and more and forget their own interests, simply give them up, and clearly damage their own policy. But the ruling elites of United Europe continue to impose hysteria. It turns out that war with Russian is almost on the verge. They repeat this nonsense, this mantra, over and over again. To be honest, I sometimes look at what they say, but I do not believe it. They cannot believe what they are saying, that Russia is going to attack NATO. It is impossible to believe this, and they still try to persuade their own people. What kind of people are these? They are either very incompetent, if they really believe this, because it is impossible to believe this nonsense, or they are simply disorderly people, because they themselves do not believe this, and their citizens are trying to convince their own citizens. But what other options are there? To be honest, I just want to say, go to sleep, sleep quietly, and finally deal with your own problems. Look at what is happening on the streets of European cities. What is happening to the economy, industry, European culture, and identity? Huge debt and an increasing crisis of their social systems, which have come out of a lack of control of migration. The growth of violence, including political violence, radicalization of the left-wing, ultra-liberal, racist, and marginal societies. Pay attention to how Europe is sliding to the periphery of global competition. We are well aware of how all the threats against Russia, Russia's aggressive plans, which Europe itself intimidates us with, were sucked out of our fingers. As I have said, this self-indulgence is a dangerous thing, and we cannot ignore what is happening. We have no right to do this for the sake of ensuring our own security, but we do this for our defense and our own security. Therefore, we closely monitor the growing force of militarization in Europe. Is it just words, or is it time for us to take our own responsible countermeasures? We hear and you know about it. For example, in the FRG, Federal Republic of Germany, they say that the German army should be the most powerful in Europe again. Well, we're listening very carefully to that. We look at what is meant. I think that no one has any doubt that such measures by Russia will not make themselves wait very long. The threat of retaliation against us seems, to put it mildly, very convincing. It will be very convincing, the response. We ourselves have never initiated a military confrontation. It is pointless, unnecessary, and absurd. It leads to real problems and challenges, and society, sooner or later, will ask its leaders what are their hopes, desires, and needs, and they do not wish to be ignored by these elites in their own countries. But if someone still has a desire to compete with us in the military sphere, as we say, let them try. Russia has proven more than once that when there is a threat to its security, peace, and tranquility of its citizens, our sovereignty and statehood, we will respond quickly. There is no need to provoke us. There was no case that, in the end, it did not end badly for the provocateur himself. There is no need to wait for exceptions here or in the future. There will not be any. Our history has proven that weakness is unacceptable because it creates a temptation, an illusion, that some issue can be resolved against us with force. Russia will not, this is not a correct translation, Russia will never lose to weakness and indecisiveness. Let those remember this whom we interfere with. And that's a bad translation too. Let those remember this, that attempt to interfere with our very existence. Those who dream of defeating us strategically. Speaking of those who actively talk about this, as we say, they are far away. Where are these actors? He's talking about Europe. There are so many objective problems associated with factors of natural technogenic and social nature in the world that it is unacceptable to spend force and energy on artificial, invented conflict. It is unacceptable, exhausting, and simply stupid. International security is a multifaceted and indivisible phenomenon that no geopolitical valuable demarcation can break it. Only meticulous... I got to get to the end of this hymn. How much further does it have to go? Because I don't think I'm going to make it. Yeah, no, he spoke for 45 minutes, and I don't have enough time to finish it. If you have the opportunity, I do want to get to his questions, but man, I am going to run out tonight, unfortunately, of time. Perhaps on Sunday night, I will put together a summary, because it's very important to listen to Nebenzia, and I do want to talk about some of the things that are going to be coming up in Russia's presidency of the United Nations Security Council, which is all of October. I told you about what they're attempting to do in Bosnia to get rid of that king that the West appointed. They were talking a lot about Iran and how the West bent the rules, that Iran has been trying to get something to work out, and the West, without any consensus, without a vote, without anything, renewed, they claim, sanctions. And Nebenzia going, nope, we don't recognize those. And the guy says, well, what about these? He goes, what about all these sanctions? He goes, they don't exist. They were not properly implemented, and they expire. And the West can't just say, oh, geez, we renewed these UN sanctions. There are no UN sanctions against Iran after whatever day it was, the 18th. And I really wish I had enough time to go through the entire Vladimir Vladimirovich speech, because I think, aside from the fact that... Well, you know what? Let's get to the part on Ukraine. Where is that? Because what did he say on Ukraine? There are other factors and other geopolitical interests. This is back to Vladimir Vladimirovich. It turned out that ideological contradictions have nothing to do with resolving problems in multipolarity. How can problems be resolved in a polycentric world? Yes, and how would the situation in Ukraine be resolved with multipolarity? I think if there was multipolarity, its different poles would try to adjust a situation around the Ukraine conflict, what it called on itself, to those potential zones of tension, to the breakdowns that exist in their own region, and then a collective decision would be much more responsible and weighted. Based on adjustments, it would be necessary to understand that all participants in this difficult situation have their own interests. They are justified by objective and subjective circumstances and should not be ignored. It can go on for a while, you know, and what they're going to do to expand NATO. He goes into BRICS and China and India and Brazil. It's a long speech, but it doesn't look like I'm going to get there. I did want to go through some of the questions because there were so many questions. And what I thought I would do when the day started, because I was reading, there was an interesting opinion piece. Where was it? Out of France, I think, that they were talking about this Valdai debate club and how Putin is always one of the keynote speakers. And it always, I think it always is in Sochi. And I'd love to just hang out outside, and see if I could talk to some of these people. I think it would be, extremely, I don't know what, it would certainly be worth a trip, even if you were just hanging out outside in Sochi. Sochi's beautiful anyway, from everything that I've heard. I had a trip, I was supposed to go to Sochi. In fact, that's why they booted me out of the army. I got screwed on that deal. And I should have retired from the military, but they booted me out because I was in the middle of law school, and they were sending me to Sochi. And I said, you can't send me to Sochi. I'm in law school. It cost me $40,000 a year. I can't just quit. And they said, well, we won't make you go. But if you don't go, you can't reenlist. I was like, you a-holes. You know, and it's like, well, I can't. What am I supposed to do? Are you going to pay for next year's $40,000? What am I supposed to do? It was a bad deal. And so, you know, and you know why they wanted me to go? That was even the worst part of it. They wanted me to go because the guy, in fact, there was a guy that was going to outrank me, but I was going to go because I was the only one in the unit that had any in Russia experience. And they wanted me to go over and be in charge, even though I wasn't, there was a couple of people that outranked me, but they wanted me to go and be in charge. And I said, why can't he go? Let him do it. Well, first of all, his Russian was horrible. And second of all, he had a drinking problem. And I was like, well, I'm not his babysitter. I'm supposed to give up law school. Anyway, I'm totally sidetracked. And but that just, the only time I was supposed to go to Sochi, I didn't get to go. And I was like, I would go any time other than, you know, to miss a semester of law school. I'm not going to do that, you know, unless you pay me the money back. Well, they wouldn't do that either, obviously. But who paid the freight on that? Old Sammy. There you have it. I got screwed again by the government. Anyway, you don't need to hear that story at all, but you did anyway. There you have it. I wanted to get to a couple of the questions and answers because there were so many. He was on the stage. The video, if you go back and see this video, his video is like 3 hours and 40 minutes that he was on the stage taking questions. So let me tell you what is the Valdai Discussion Club. For those who are unfamiliar, it's the Valdai Discussion Club was set up in 2004, takes its name from the Lake Valdai near Veliki Novgorod, the site of the club's first meeting. The symbolizing the club's importance, Russian President Putin was among the officials to attend the first gathering more than 20 years ago. This year's forum in Sochi is the 22nd annual gathering. In 2014, management of the club was taken over by Valdai Club. Under the auspices of Russian think tank, the Council of Foreign and Defense Policy, the Russian International Affairs Council, Moscow State Institute of International Relations, and the Higher School of Economics. The discussion club is headed by regular RT contributor Fyodor Lukyanov and is regarded as the most influential forum bringing together Russia experts and policymakers. Lukyanov, I read some stories of his from you on several times. Symbolizing its reach, this year's events brings together 140 participants, speakers, from 42 countries, including Algeria, Brazil, China, Egypt, Ethiopia, Germany, India, Indonesia, Iran, Kazakhstan, Malaysia, Pakistan, Russia, South Africa, United Arab Emirates, United Kingdom, United States, Uzbekistan, and Venezuela, among others, of course. There were plenty. Let's see. Putin is expected to address the gathering. This is at noon today. Is expected to address the gathering in Sochi before taking part in a question and answer. Kremlin spokesman Peskov has teased Putin's address this year by saying, "Without exaggeration, the whole world is eagerly awaiting this speech. As a rule, it turns out to be extremely substantive and is discussed and analyzed for a long time. And I'm going to do it again, naturally." Because it's a hell of a topic. This guy got up there and spoke for and answered questions for 3.5 hours. This is important stuff. Putin's address is expected to focus on polycentric world order. You heard about half of it. You didn't get it all. Putin was scheduled to speak from 4 p.m. local time, but it might be another hour. Let's see. Then they showed some highlights of previous speeches when he was speaking. He said, there is no... Well, no, that wasn't him. That was Lavrov. I want to get back to some of the questions when they get there. Peskov was still speaking before he came out, and he said there's been an unhinged position being taken by European backers of Ukraine and a rather abstract stance that shows Kyiv itself doesn't add predictability or stability to the situation around the conflict. They don't want continued negotiations. They don't want to try to reach an agreement on anything, he said. But nevertheless, we must proceed calmly and maintain an openness to dialogue and communication with all parties. Let's see. There's Peskov again. I want to get to the questions. Well, there's so many questions. One of the here's one of the key comments, which I believe I shared with you. Multilateral solutions require considerable impartiality and sometimes a non-standard diplomacy, Putin says. I am convinced we will witness a renaissance of higher diplomacy that aims at coming to term with your own neighbors. New institutions are being developed, like BRICS, Shanghai Cooperation. They are different, but united on the same trait, not on subordination. They are not against anyone, but for themselves. Tell you what, this is a hell of a speech. And if you're unfamiliar with it, find something. Here is the lady. Where is she? Former U.S. Senate aide for Joe Biden, Tara Reid, asked the Russian president about his take on the inflow of nationals of Western countries who seek to move to Russia. Reid herself gained Russian citizenship last month, 2 years after she applied for asylum in the country. I cannot say there's been a huge influx, said Putin, but there's still been thousands of people. Indeed, people are coming, especially from European countries, not for political reasons, but for the sake of values, because there's a sort of gender terrorism, I would say. Many people are unhappy with the treatment of their children, and people are looking for safe havens to escape that, he said. Can you believe that? I mean, it's exactly what I was talking about on the phone earlier. Crazy stuff. Russian president accused France of piracy when asked about a recent raid on an oil tanker. I don't know if you heard about that. Alleging that the Russian vessel was part of a shadow fleet. And he said, they were apparently looking for military cargo, drones, and other such things. There is nothing of the kind there. There never was, and there cannot be, he said. If the EU wishes to be a powerful civilizational center, it is now in decline, he said. And he invoked an assessment made by then-German Chancellor Helmut Kohl in the early 90s. If Europe wants to remain one of the independent centers of the world civilization, then it must be with Russia, Kohl said at the time. Do you remember that? I do remember that. Well, there's all kinds of stuff to go into here, and I encourage you all to seek further information. Whether you get it from me or not, I am here nightly from Sunday through Thursday. It's my last night of the week for the show. I will be here on Sunday night for a deep dive, and I believe I will continue with this trend because I think it is important to listen to Nebenzia and to go into some of the discussions that Vladimir Putin was having. Many things are happening in the world right now. And he, if you listen to him closely, He's saying we will defend our interests to the maximum, but we're ready to work with the rest of the world, and we always have been. I, you know, hate to say it, but it's hard not to agree with him when he's been saying the same thing since Bill Clinton times. And so I don't know where to go. Anyway, this is International Flavor. I'm Samuel Trapp. You can always listen in to me 9 to 10:30 nightly at damradio.com/live. You can listen to all my past shows at internationalflavor.com and at damradio.com/podcasts. Thank you for listening. Join me again Sunday night, and I will see you then. Good night.